I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new biography of Frank Calder out now. It's called He Moved a Mountain, The Life of Frank Calder and the Nishka Land Claims Accord. Its author Joan Harper joins me now to talk about writing it, as well as who Calder was and just how meaningful he was to the history and politics of British Columbia. Calder was born into the Nishka Nation on the Nass River in northern British Columbia. He went on to become the first Aboriginal person elected to the Canadian legislature, to a Canadian legislature. He served 26 years as an MLA here in BC and was a pivotal force in the area of recognition of Aboriginal land title. I'll get Ms. Harper to tell us about the Calder case and its ramifications. The Nishka Nation bestowed on Calder the title Chief of Chiefs, one of many honors Calder held, including the Order of Canada and various honorary degrees. Joan Harper's career was in the field of library education at the Vancouver School Board and the University of British Columbia. The book is published by Ronsdale Press. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in Sechelt, British Columbia, Joan Harper. Ms. Harper, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes.
What compelled you to write a book on Frank Calder? And I was just thinking about how there hasn't been a book on Calder. Is that correct?
Yes. No, I believe this is the first biography. It's rather curious how I came to write it. I was living in Victoria at the time, but I had not been in BC during his career, where my husband and I were in Toronto. And when I came back and was living in Victoria, he died, and streets were blocked off, and there were obituaries in all the papers, and the Sunday section was devoted to him. And I was reading it, and I heard that he was survived by his wife, Tamaki Calder. And I played bridge in the same club as Tamaki Calder. So when she came back, I talked to her, and I said, you know, about her husband, etc. And she said, well, Joan, he really wanted his story told. Would you write the book?
Hmm.
And so that's how I came to do it, even though I was not an experienced author.
Yeah. And so in terms of finding material on him, I mean, I guess the family, they were quite heartened to give you, say, insight onto him and information and where to go to look for information?
Yes, it was a difficult topic to research. The main reason was that in B.C., Hansard for the B.C. legislature did not begin till 1970. And Frank ended his career in 79, and really he'd done his major work before the time of Hansard. So I had to go back and rely heavily on newspaper articles and on interviews with family and friends, and as well the archives.
He was born when?
In 1915.
And that was in Nishka, right?
Yes, he was born in the wilderness of the Northwest Pacific of British Columbia on the wilderness lands of the Nass, that is today are the Nishka lands.
Did you spend much time up there?
No, I have never actually been up there.
Yeah.
It is difficult to access, and it's also very expensive.
Yeah. In terms of size, what are we talking about in how big the Nishka Nation is now and how many people live there?
Well, many of the Nishka have left the Nishka lands.
I see.
However, they still have a very large office there, etc., and they do give workshops on Aboriginal title to people who come from many other lands. They are quite a forward-thinking nation, and many of the people who have left have been very, very successful. In a workshop that I gave just 2 days ago, there was a Nishka couple there. The woman was a granddaughter of Frank Calder's, and she came up to me afterwards and told me with great pride that her son had just received his PhD in clinical psychology.
Huh. Really? Yeah. What sort of childhood was it like for Frank Calder up there?
it like for Frank Calder?
Yeah.
Well, Frank did not leave the Niskalans until he was 9 years of age. The chief had had, his adopted father was the chief of the village of Greenville, and he had a special purpose in bringing up Frank. He gave him a lot of chores, like bringing water 3 times a day, collecting firewood. He taught him to hunt and fish, and at a great feast, when Frank was only 6 years old, he stood him on a table and said, "This boy, the dream boy, I am going to send to a white area, and he will learn to talk like a white man, eat like a white man, and walk like a white man, and then he will move that mountain." And the mountain represented land title. And they believed that land title was as hard to achieve as moving a mountain.
And then in the course of reading this book, we find out how he did that. In terms of, in reading the book, he leaves to go to UBC, but it took him a while to get his degree because he kept, he had to go back to make money for it, right?
That's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, throughout his education, he went to residential school, and residential schools only went to grade 10. And he made arrangements to stay there and ride his bicycle into nearby Chilliwack and graduate from Chilliwack High. And from there, he went to UBC and became an Anglican minister. It took him 6 years instead of the usual 4 because he did have to go back to fish every summer and sometimes longer. Throughout his education, he never received any bursaries, any scholarships, or any student loans. Huh. He and his family paid for everything.
How did he end up in politics?
Well, that was a little bit of a act of fate, I guess. After he had graduated from the Anglican Theological College, Frank went to work in Prince Rupert in the fish cannery there and was a tallyman. He was also an elected member of the United Fishermen's Association. And during a slow period in the fishing, he went home to visit. And while he was there, an election was called, and Reverend Smith, the sitting member for the riding of Atlin, in which the Niskalans were encompassed, came to campaign. And a huge storm arose, and it made it very difficult to travel, so he took refuge at the Clark Calder House. And, of course, after dinner, talk always turned to politics around the fire, etc. And one night, Frank asked him, "Who's running against you?" And he said, "No one." And Frank's brother, Philip, takes full credit for his career because he looked at his brother and said, "Why don't you run, Frank?"
Huh.
Frank laughed. He didn't really think he could. But actually, it was Reverend Smith who convinced him to do so. And he thought it would be very good for the First Nations people to have their own candidate. So Frank did run, and I think to everyone's surprise, even Reverend Smith, he won.
So he runs against Reverend Smith. Smith was a liberal, is that right?
And he ran for the NDP party against Reverend.
Oh, okay, so he, I guess that would have been CCF at the time.
Yes, and it was CCF,
yeah,
at the time, and that is all explained in the book.
Yeah.
And how they changed their name eventually.
Yeah, so he becomes the MLA, and he's there from 49 to 79, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was out of office for one period of 4 years.
I see. Okay. So that's the 26 years in that period. We're skipping here because it's such a rich life, and you do such a wonderful job in telling us about Calder. When the NDP becomes government in 1972, he becomes a member of the cabinet. Is that right? Is he the first Aboriginal in a cabinet?
Yes, he was the first Aboriginal to be elected to any kind of elected government in Canada, and he was also the first cabinet minister. And he was made minister with a portfolio.
And unfortunately, when people think of Calder, they think of the Calder case, of course, but they also think of the incident that resulted in his removal from cabinet.
That's very, very true. And in fact, you know, when he died and there were these thousands, it seemed to me, of obituaries, I went to the library and got all sorts of copies of them. And it was amazing how often that incident was mentioned, even in his obituaries many years later. And I do explain in the book how that got so much publicity. And, you know, many of our politicians have been caught in liquor incidents, and they have not been pilloried the way Frank was. And it was 3 months after the incident before Premier Barrett
mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, took him to task and fired him.
Did you talk to anyone around him at the time and how he felt about his treatment from Dave Barrett?
Most unfortunately, I have never met Frank Calder, and it's one of the regrets of my life.
Uh-huh.
But I know he wanted his story told, and he had 3 major reasons for that. One was that he wanted to know, people to know, that government help was not needed for every cause, and that you could be successful without government help. And he very much wanted people to know that First Nations people had helped to build Canada too. And lastly, he very much wanted people to know the true story of why he had been ousted from his chosen political party. I do think that the rude ousting, he felt, besmirched his reputation.
Was that the reason why he left the NDP and joined the Socred soon after?
He didn't leave the NDP.
Oh, he didn't?
No, he did not leave the NDP. And most people think, even today I'm asked, well, you know, he crossed before.
Yeah.
He never did that. When he was ousted, or when he wasn't, not at the time he was ousted from cabinet, but at the next election, he was up at the NISCA convention that they always held in the fall of the year. And during a break, somebody came rushing up to him and said, Frank, did you know that an election has been called? His wife, Tamaki, was with him and has told me this in detail. And Frank was astounded, and he said, it can't have. And they said, yes, it was on the radio, and there's going to be an election on December 4th. Well, Frank was just amazed, and he immediately phoned his office in Victoria, and the news just got worse. The NDP had held a nomination meeting in Auckland. Frank, at this point, had held that riding for them for 23 years, and they had elected someone else to run in his stead in Auckland.
Huh.
So he didn't have a riding. And Tamaki says he was just absolutely flabbergasted, and he just couldn't believe what had happened. And both the Liberals and the Social Credit approached him to run for their party. And he chose Social Credit because he thought that they had the best chance of getting a majority. He ran as a Socred member, and he defeated the NDP.
During all of this, I guess the Calder case, was that being argued at the Supreme Court?
Yes, it was argued in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and so his name, I mean, is forever associated with that, and I mean it's a landmark case in Canadian jurisprudence. What is its significance? Because there are probably people listening to us who don't know what that's about, and what his role was in all of this.
Well, Frank was the driving force behind it. I mean, he had been given the mission to move that mountain as a six-year-old child, and he never forgot it. And he was the one who approached Thomas Berger and convinced him that, yes, there could be a case, and Thomas Berger was a very bright young lawyer. It took them a couple of years of sort of talking the NIFCA into it and surrounding nations, and then they went to the three court cases. And actually, they lost all three cases. Hmm. They were defeated in the B.C. Supreme Court, the B.C. Court of Appeal, and the Supreme Court of Canada was actually a tie. And in a tie, they lost. But Pierre Trudeau was so convinced by the arguments that had been put forward that he took a motion to Parliament, and in an all-party vote, each party voted overwhelmingly in favor of Aboriginal title, and Aboriginal title became law in Canada as a result.
And so I remember that in the late 1990s there was a lot of talk politically about the Nishka Treaty. I guess that was the first treaty that between a government and a nation in British Columbia. Is that correct?
Well, there had been some Douglas treaties when Governor Douglas, you know, very early on in colonial times.
Uh-huh.
But when Canada joined when Vancouver Island joined BC, and when BC joined
Confederation.
Yeah, Canada. But those treaties were not recognized, and so they became futile.
I see. And so in terms of what happened with the Nishka Nation with the treaty, I mean, this is obviously in the time after politics for Frank Calder. He's very active up there, was he? In
after the Nishka Treaty?
Or in the run-up to the Nishka Treaty, say, what was he doing in the 80s and 90s when he was in retirement?
Well, in retirement, Frank was not acting on behalf of the Nishka.
I see.
Gosnell was...
Joe Gosnell, yeah.
Was their chief negotiator. But, however, behind the scenes, Frank had a lot of influence, and he used it where he could.
Yeah. And so the retirement years for Frank Calder, were they happy ones?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He had a lot of pressures in his life. There were domestic pressures at home. And as well, I don't think he was really happy about the way his career had ended. But he did do a lot. He was served on a lot of government committees, and he did keep very active throughout his retirement. And he also was very busy speaking at award ceremonies. He was a very, he received many, many different awards.
His wife, Tamaki, his widow, has she read the book?
Yes.
Yeah, and does she like it?
Yes. She's in favor of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when did they meet?
When did...
Tamaki and Calder, when did they meet?
They met in 1973 for the first time. And Tamaki had been sent to Victoria by her family because of the fact that in Japan... when someone is getting married, the families investigate the family into which they're marrying.
Mm-hmm.
And Tamaki had been divorced, which was a great shadow over the family. So they wanted her out of the way, and they sent her to Victoria because one of her uncles had married a woman who lived there. So when she arrived there, she took English lessons, etc., and she volunteered. She could only get tips, but she worked in a restaurant as a hostess at a Japanese restaurant, and Frank came in one night, and that was how they met.
Yeah. And so she was younger than he was, is that right?
Very, very much younger. Approximately 25 years.
Yeah. In terms of who should read this book, because, I mean, we started the conversation by talking about how there hadn't been a book on Calder, and he's, you know, an important seminal figure in British Columbia history. Do you have a sense of who ought to pick this book up and read it?
Well, you know, Altiero said at Frank's funeral, he said that the life of Frank Calder should be studied by everyone because he was such a model for the way, I guess, he felt that life should be led. And I think it would be a very good book for high school students and for the general public and anyone who wants to read it. It's not a long, heavily academic book. I think it's quite a readable book.
Yeah, it is, yeah. By the way, I missed talking about how he was defeated. Was that the 79 election when he lost?
Yes, that was his last election.
Yeah, and he lost by how many votes?
One.
That's one of the legends in Canadian BC politics, certainly. Did he get to vote in that election, or what was the story there?
No, he did vote, but Tamaki did not vote.
I see.
Okay. Yes.
It shows you the importance of getting out to vote, I guess, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And yeah. Tamaki really could not vote because she had never taken out Canadian citizenship. But she did so very promptly, but it was a little bit after the fact.
Yeah. Well, was he? How did Calder feel about losing that election?
He was going to be 65 the following August. And, you know, he certainly was not young, but I think he was disappointed. I'm quite sure that he would have liked to have continued at least for another 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. And it must have hurt because this was, you know, the part of the world where he had served for so long and had grown up in, right?
Well, Tamaki told me that actually at this point, there was a lot of difficulty over getting recompense for the Calder case because they had won finally. And they felt that Frank was in the best position to do so. And, of course, the political party he was with wanted absolutely nothing to do with giving away land. And so he was caught between the two. But there was a lot of resentment because they were not getting compensation. And Tamaki said one of the most disappointing things of his entire career was that it was his own people who hadn't voted for him.
Yeah. Did you enjoy writing this book?
It was a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. Yeah. You've done a great service, Joan, with writing this book because it is an important life, and it's one that people ought to read about, and you've done a good job in this book. Introducing us to Frank Calder. I appreciate your time today. Good luck with the book.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. The book is called He Moved a Mountain, The Life of Frank Calder and the Nisga Land Claims Accord. It's published by Ronsdale Press. Its author, Joan Harper, joined me on the line from Sechelt, British Columbia in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.